Anchor.fm. You can give us money online. We'll take it. We so appreciate your support. You know, KBOO is you. You are KBOO. We are nothing without our members. And
it's so true. It's that grassroots community support that makes us what we are. And we are indeed radio by the community and for the community. Our volunteers come in here as a labor of love, dishing up the programming that you hear. And we ask you to support it with some funds so we can keep the lights on and the signal flowing. That's 877-500-5266. Or online at kboo.fm. Join us now. Become a member of Community Radio. Support your entire community. Take right action with one simple phone call. 1-877-500-5266.
Join us this Wednesday, October 16th from 9 a.m. to noon for a special program on the politics of austerity.
Austerity is harm. It's the equivalent of leeches for medicine. You might think you're doing some good, but all you're doing is weakening the patient.
Featuring Mark Blythe, author of Austerity, The History of a Dangerous Idea, Robert Kuttner, author of Debtor's Prison, The Politics of Austerity, Sanjay Basu, author of The Body Economic, Why Austerity Kills, and Ellen Brown, author of The Public Bank Solution, From Austerity to Prosperity. That's Wednesday, October 16th, from 9 a.m. to noon for our austerity special right here on KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. From Indian vultures to Chinese bees, nature provides the natural services that keep the economy going, as well as ecological balance. From the recycling miracles in the soil to an army of predators ridding us of unwanted pests, it has been estimated that these and other services each year are worth about double the global GDP. Yet we take most of nature's services for granted, imagining them free and limitless, until they suddenly switch off. This morning, we talk with British environmentalist Tony Juniper, author of What Has Nature Ever Done for Us? How Money Really Does Grow on Trees. Tony is the author of several books, including Parrots of the World, Spix's Macaw, and How Many Light Bulbs Does It Take to Change a Planet? Tony, welcome to Locus Focus.
Hello, very nice to talk to you.
So first of all, I want to know, why did you call your book What Has Nature Ever Done for Us? What do you mean by that?
Well, for any listeners who've ever come across Monty Python, you may see a certain ring of familiarity with a phrase that was very famous in one of their films called The Life of Brian, where the question is asked, what have the Romans ever done for us? And the question is intended to elicit the response that the Romans have done nothing for the people of Judea and in the Christian era, and that the Romans have been of no use at all to the people they've conquered. And there then follows a great long list of things that the Romans have in fact done. The sanitation, the roads, the wine, the law and order, the education. And it becomes clear that actually the Romans have been a force for good, even though it's widely held amongst the people there that actually the Romans are useless. And so I pose the same question in relation to nature. What has nature ever done for us? And I think in many economic circles and in many political circles, certainly in this country and I believe to an extent in the United States, you have the suggestion that nature is pretty useless. It's a block to development. It gets in the way of growth. Looking after nature is a cost we can ill afford. And then you ask the question, well, after all, what's nature ever done for us? Why should we protect it? And then, of course, there's a great long list. There's the fresh air and the oxygen being replenished by plankton in the ocean. There's the pollination of crops by bees. There's the replenishment of soil fertility. There's the carbon being taken up by forests. There's coastal areas being protected from flooding by mangrove forests. And then there's this huge biodiversity, which provides all these amazing solutions in engineering and design challenges and so on and so on and so on. And so the book really is posing that question in a slightly humorous way with the inspiration of that Monty Python sketch, and just getting people to think that actually, you know, we've got things quite badly wrong, because the implicit message that comes from so many in politics and in business indeed and so many economists is that nature is useless, it doesn't do very much, and it's the best place to get resources and dump our waste, and apart from that, nature's not really very important. And so really that's the reason for the title, and I think readers have got that pretty quickly, actually, and I think a little bit of humor does help on some of these questions.
Well, I should have suspected it had something to do with Monty Python, but actually, wouldn't you say that nature's done a lot more for us probably than the Romans did for the British?
Yeah, certainly. Without nature, we're nowhere. And one of the things that I think is very interesting in the way economic choices are put across to voters from the politicians is, you know, this idea that somehow there's a choice between protecting the economy on the one hand and promoting growth and competitiveness, whilst looking after nature on the other is a completely separate thing. And one, obviously, the economy is much more important than the other, nature. And so we go along with this idea that somehow we have to go for one set of priorities and the other we can ignore, when the reality of the world we inhabit is so different. Because without nature, there is no economy. And liquidating nature to grow the economy is at best a short-term project. And it is something that is so obvious to say, it almost is ridiculous to say it. And yet we have to say this and to point out these basics, because so many people seem convinced of the prevailing wisdom, which tells us that, you know, we need to be rolling back environmental laws, not cutting carbon, to be relaxing pollution prevention legislation, to be opening up natural areas for development, because all these things are good for growth, when in fact there is no growth without nature. And so this is the kind of fundamental understanding I'm trying to unearth with the book, and I'm delighted to see that many readers actually have seen that. And I think, you know, the strength of the argument is all the better as a result of having it put it out there like that.
Well, some people in the environmental movement are very uncomfortable with putting a dollar figure on the value of nature.
Yes.
And the whole movement of natural capital, I think, makes some people uncomfortable.
It does.
But let's I'm uncomfortable with hearing, well, this is worth this much and this is worth that much. But there's another side of what you bring up in your book, which I thought was very powerful, is how expensive it is to fix natural systems once we destroy them. So let's talk a little bit about that, and then we actually will need to talk to people about another natural system they need to support, which is our community radio station here. So why is it so expensive, or how do we look at the actual expense of fixing natural systems?
Well, on the first point about, you know, the extent to which some people are quite nervous about looking at nature through the lens of dollar values, I share some of that. But, you know, whilst I accept there is a danger of looking at nature through this economic route, I think there's an even bigger danger in not looking at nature through this economic route, because the main reason why we continue to destroy forests and soils and wetlands and to pollute the ocean and pollute the atmosphere, the reason we continue to do this is because it is seen as economically rational. And telling people that nature is more important than the economy simply won't work. I've been doing that for 30 years and it didn't work. But I do find enormous power in going back to the people who believe that economic story, that economic fairy tale, in fact. The people who believe that, I say to them, look, have you worked out that this economic growth that you keep promoting, it is actually standing on pillars of natural capital that have an economic value, and if you remove them, your economy collapses? And that is a very different way of going into the argument. And for those people who are thinking, well, you know, this is taking us towards the privatization of nature, putting a dollar value on it removes nature's real value, I say, actually, you know, nature has a number of values. Some of them are spiritual, I believe that. Some of them are aesthetic, it's beautiful. Some of them are intrinsic, it's got nothing to do with us. You know, at one level, it's about keeping nature, because nature is her own thing, and we don't have the right to destroy it. But then all sorts of scientific values and the extent to which intact nature gives us insights about how the world works. All of those, the scientific, the aesthetic, the spiritual, and the intrinsic values, I don't see us having to surrender those when we say, in addition to all of that, nature is economically essential. I'm not saying that these things are less important than economics. I'm saying they're there alongside economics. And I think if we can bottom this out to the point where people can see that, you know, this is an additional thing that we've overlooked, then I think the arguments that we have for the environment become that much stronger. And then when you start to look at, you know, what these dollar values mean in practice, one I quote in the book is the estimated value of pollinators to the global economy. So one research process estimates that pollinators, bees mostly, other insects and bats and birds up to a point, are contributing something like $190 billion worth of value to the economy every year. And this, of course, is principally seen in the agricultural output. Two-thirds of the world's crop plants are pollinated by insects, by animals, mostly insects. And that, of course, is the foundation of our food security. You take the pollinators away, we have less food. And that's a very direct and very strong connection. And one story I came across, which really helps you to put that financial figure into a very practical context, relates to an area of southwestern China.
Actually,
where during the 1980s.
Tony, I have to interject because we actually have to do a little bit of fundraising here. So I wanted to keep the stories for the next part of the show.
And, okay.
But I want listeners to know this morning we're talking with Tony Juniper, who's author of What Has Nature Ever Done For Us? How Money Really Does Grow on Trees. And we'll be back talking to him in just a couple more moments, and we'll learn a bit more about the value of pollinators as well as soil and photosynthesis as some of the values of nature that have intrinsic as well as economic force in this world that we live in. But now we're going to talk with Ani and Jen about why this is another very intrinsic force here in the community of northwestern Oregon. It's a force called KBOO, which I think keeps us going in vital ways that we don't even think to measure. Something else that people often just take for granted and think that's free, but in fact, we're not free, and we need to come to you every couple of times a year to remind you that you are the reason that we're here. You are the reason that we are able to do all the amazing kinds of broadcasting we do, because you help us pay the bills. So, Ani and Jen, let's talk a little bit about why people need to support KBOO.
It's very simple. It's because you crave information like this. You need information like this to live an informed life so that you can, in fact, take right action and you can know what's going on sort of deep behind the scenes. What has nature ever done for us? Well, plenty, as you are hearing in this interview this morning with Tony Juniper. And I can't wait to hear the story about China that we'll get back to in just a moment. But right now, so you don't miss a word of that, give us a call. 877-500-5266. It is important that you support with your dollars what you already, you know, what supports your mind, what supports your heart, what supports your soul, and in fact, what supports your entire community. That is the essence of community radio. We need you to fill in the gap and be our financial sponsors, because that's what keeps us independent. That's what keeps us connected to the grassroots so that we can talk about the importance of pollinators in our food chain. And in our world, so that we can talk about the importance of seeing things as they truly are and not this sort of hyper-capitalist gloss that gets thrown on stuff by the mainstream media. It's important that we support information from the grassroots so that we can, in fact, inform ourselves and each other and take right action. 877-500-5266 is the right action to take right now, and with your contribution of $60 or more, we would love to give you a copy of What Has Nature Ever Done For Us? How Money Really Does Grow on Trees by Tony Juniper. You're listening to the interview right now with Barbara Bernstein, and you can get a copy of that book with your donation of $60 or more at 877-500-5266, or you could join us online at kboo.fm.
Or if you like, you can come down and meet us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We would love to meet you. And I could tell you later about how I grow money on trees. I grow 16 kinds of fruit in my Southeast urban yard. And I know that there's a tremendous amount of value in nature. I also raise native bees. And this kind of information, this kind of in-depth reporting on the value of nature and how it's not just a beautiful scene, but it actually has economic importance to our daily life, It's so critical for us to know. It's information that we can use whenever we're making arguments in our community about why we shouldn't be exporting coal. 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266. You rely on KBOO for vital information to do your work in the community, to learn about things that you need to know. Call us at 877-500-5266 and support us today.
And think of KBOO as pollinators. I think that we pollinate ideas and spirit and action here in the community. And when you call 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm and become a member, you will be helping to pollinate our community with a whole verve and direction towards the future. So we're back now talking with Tony Juniper, who is author of What Has Nature Ever Done For Us? How Money Really Does Grow on Trees. And Tony, I want you to go back to the story that you were just starting to tell us about the importance of pollinators.
Indeed. So the point, Barbara, was the connection between these very large and apparently abstract-sounding figures. For example, in the case of pollinators, one research report suggests they're worth about $190 billion to the economy worldwide through the production of food and being able to sustain human food security. And there's one story I came across which puts that abstract number into really quite practical and immediate terms, which relates to an area in southwestern China where during the 1980s there was very heavy use of pesticides to be able to control pests in fruit orchards, insect pests. And in this area of Sichuan province, there was a very effective control of pests that were damaging fruit, but at the same time they killed all the pollinating insects. And so if you go to that part of southwestern China today, the bees have still not come back. And as a result of this, entire villages have to turn out in the springtime and to climb into the fruit trees with feather dusters in their hand in order to be able to move the pollen between the blossoms individually through human labor. And so this is a very good example of what happens when you take the bees away who are doing that work for us. Then you can start to see what happens in terms of the economic consequences of that, because the people climbing the trees and moving the pollen obviously can't be driving taxis or teaching their kids or working in a restaurant or farming their fields apart from the bit they're doing in the trees there, because they're having to do the work that the bees were doing. So these kinds of stories, I think, are very powerful in letting us know where nature is adding real value. And there's many, many stories that I relate in the book like this, where what I'm trying to do is to bring the message that's coming from the ecological economics research, which is starting to put some dollar values on this, but then also helping readers to see that actually it's not simply about dollar values. This is about real change taking place in the world that has real consequences for people. And another story, which may be more of interest to listeners and readers in the United States, is about the way in which some diseases are controlled through natural systems interacting in ways that help to protect human health. And one story I talk about is the outbreak of West Nile virus in the United States during 2001. This killed a lot of people, caused misery for families, cost several hundred million dollars worth of healthcare expenses, impact on GDP and everything else. Some researchers looking at the distribution of the infections after the disease had subsided found a very interesting pattern across the United States, which they found very hard to explain. They looked at infections in relation to household income, lifestyle, socioeconomic factors, including profession and all these kinds of things. But the factor they found explained the biggest variation in the spread of infections was wild bird diversity, would you believe? So where there were more species of wild birds, there were less infections of West Nile virus. And the reason for this is that the mosquito that transmits West Nile virus between people, it prefers to bite birds before it bites people. So where there's a lot of bird diversity, the mosquito has a lot of opportunity to feed on its preferred host, namely feathered creatures, not people. You take the birds away, and the mosquito then bites people more often. And that's why the disease was more prevalent in places with less birds. And there's story after story like this, which underlines the fact that nature is doing an awful lot for us sometimes invisibly in the huge economic value that's being delivered. And, you know, as we were saying earlier on, for me, this is not to say that the intrinsic values of nature are less important. I think birds are really beautiful. I think birds should be protected. I think we should be encouraging birds everywhere, including in cities. But another reason why we should do it, not only are they beautiful and interesting, they're also, in this particular case, making a contribution to human health through a very direct but previously unexplained route.
Well, and we actually have just a couple more minutes before we need to go back to some more fundraising, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the unintended consequences. You described a really great example of the case in China, but let's talk a little bit about the Green Revolution, which was basically a way of trying to industrialize our food system and eradicate nature. And what were the consequences of doing that?
Well, some people would point to the Green Revolution and say that we did increase food production, and of course we did, and one of the reasons why we've managed to keep pace with rising populations, especially in those parts of the world where the numbers of humans have very rapidly been increasing in recent decades, is through this industrialization of agriculture with the use of new seed varieties, very high levels of pesticide and fertilizer use, machinery replacing people. But on the other side of this, there's been a whole host of consequences which actually are beginning to provide some cause for concern insofar as that particular style of farming may not be possible to sustain long into the future. It's got very high greenhouse gas emissions. It requires very heavy resource inputs. It's very heavy in terms of its water use, and it's destroying natural capital in the form of biodiversity and soils in many of the places where that style of farming has been deployed. And I think a very interesting discussion is beginning to take place now about different styles of agriculture that into the future will be able to meet food security concerns in a more sustainable way. And funnily enough, actually, one of the great inspirations I've had in recent times on this subject was listening to President Clinton in London last week over here talking about some of the work he's been doing in Southeast Africa with his foundation. And the most inspirational stories he gave us about how food production is being massively increased in the areas where his foundation is working, but not by removing the people and replacing them with machines and chemicals, but by training the people to be using their natural capital, the soil, the water, and the pollinators that they've got locally, to be able to improve their yields and to do this in a way where they're massively increasing their income so their children can be able to go to school. But they're doing this not by removing people, but keeping people very much on the land. And I think this, for me, is the future for the next industrial, the next agricultural revolution, rather, not to be industrializing farming, but to be working with people and with natural capital to be meeting social, environmental, and food security objectives all at once. And anybody who would like to find out more about that, I'm sure that if you look at the Clinton Foundation website, you'll find stories there. I've not actually looked, but I intend to.
Okay.
But I was very impressed by that.
And we're talking this morning with Tony Juniper, author of What Has Nature Ever Done For Us? And right now we're going to ask you, what has KBOO ever done for you or for us? And I have Ani and Jen here to help illuminate the role that KBOO has as the pollinators of our community.
In fact, you know, we do pollinate ideas from one to another. We stimulate discourse between community members. We are the hub of that kind of discourse and communities of thought, I think. I think we are communities of thought, yes. And I think that that's well worth your support. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. We're looking to raise $700 for Locus Focus, and we're $100 into that right now. So $600 left to raise in the next, 22 minutes. It can be done. Please consider sustaining KBOO with a monthly contribution of $5 a month or $10 a month, $15 a month. Perhaps you're somebody who is making a reasonable wage and you could sustain us at $20 a month. Please do consider that option and pick up your phone, commit to it, say yes to KBOO, say yes to your community, and join us at a sustaining level that feels good to you. 877-500-5266. Or online, you can join us at kboo.fm. If you join us right now with that contribution of $60 or more, you could get a copy of this book, What Has Nature Ever Done For Us? How Money Really Does Grow on Trees by Tony Juniper. It's a great interview that Barbara is bringing us this morning, looking at the economic values of nature beyond the intrinsic values of nature. I agree, birds are beautiful and need to exist just because they are, in fact, amazing. But yeah, they do a lot of work for us. They are amazing in the ecosystems to not only... I hadn't realized the draw off of the West Nile carrying mosquitoes that they are good for. But I do know that, you know, birds are amazing when it comes to pest reduction overall, when it comes to some pollinating. It's they're great critters, right? Nature is full of these stories. And Tony Juniper is bringing them all to you this morning. Go ahead and give us a call. Pick up a copy of that book. It sounds fascinating. I want to read it. 877-500-5266.
It is fascinating. I mean, this is with my bedtime reading for several nights, and it's a great read, and I learned an awful lot, and he covers a lot of material that I've read by other authors, but he has for one thing, a scientific depth of understanding and a great way of writing about it. And the fact that the title is inspired by Monty Python just puts it over the top for me. Mm-hmm. And I think feeling maybe in a Monty Python moment, I'm trying to think of how to get totally over the top to get you to the phones and call 877-500-5266 and become a member of KABU. Every week I come in and do this show, and I am so grateful for KABU to be able to have this outlet here and to be able to have honed my skills over a million years of being on the air to where I feel like I really do connect with the community. And there's no other radio station where I feel like I could have the same place, the same connection, be able to have such an authentic voice and to be able to talk to people like Tony Juniper. So support all of us here at KABU who are doing amazing work as volunteers, except for Ani. Ani gets paid a pittance to do what she's doing, which is to organize all the rest of us to volunteer and become a member and help us to keep going in the strong way that we are to be this vital voice for the community. And I do like the idea of us being pollinators for the community. So pollinators of the airwaves here.
It's true.
877-500-5266.
We have a couple phone lines open right now. You can make them full by calling us at that number that Barbara just gave, 877-500-5266. Do consider joining and sustaining us with a monthly donation of just $5, $10, $15 a month. What you can work into your budget, we would love to accept. You are an important part of KABU. As we know, KABU is an important part of your life, so it's important to bring these resources together. 877-500-5266. You can get a copy of What Has Nature Ever Done For Us by Tony Juniper. You can know that you are, in fact, doing your part to support your entire community. I want to thank Jesse, and I want to thank Alan, and I want to thank David, and I want to thank Albany, and I want to thank Rich for being down here and answering those phones for people this morning. It's another way to serve the community. I want to thank Jimmy for being here this morning. And I want to thank you when you call 877-500-5266. It is a labor of love. It is a labor of community support. And it's important that you put yourself in that picture. 877-500-5266. I also want to let you know that we've been supported by some restaurants today. Bread and Ink Cafe at 3610 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, Brecken Kitchen at 1800 Northwest 16th Avenue, and Al Forno Ferruza Pizzeria at 2738 Northeast Alberta Street. We thank all of them for supporting KABU and our volunteers, and we need to thank you for calling 877-500-5266. And help us raise that last $600 left for this hour.
And we're back talking with Tony Juniper, who's author of What Has Nature Ever Done For Us? And in case you haven't gotten it, you're listening this morning to Locus Focus here on KABU Community Radio. And yes, we are in the middle of a fun drive. And we appreciate everybody who's been calling, keeping those phones ringing off the hook. Well, Tony, in the last section of this program this morning, I'd like to talk about photosynthesis, which the way you describe in the book, and I found it a really new way of looking at it, seems to me in some ways to sum up the ways that humans have sort of taken over natural systems and how we need to kind of step back and leave room for the rest of the planet to thrive?
Yes, photosynthesis is really the kind of engine room of life on this planet. And not only is it the principal means whereby the materials are being produced that keep animal life going, the chemical energy being produced from solar energy that turns into food for us, and enables us to speak and everything else, all the things we do, that's photosynthesis that's ultimately responsible for that. But also the photosynthesis is hugely important in maintaining the atmospheric composition, and there would be no oxygen in the atmosphere, for example, or very little free oxygen were it not for plants constantly breaking down carbon-based molecules and releasing oxygen back into the atmosphere as a byproduct, which keeps us animals going, and at the same time, Photosynthesis is helping to regulate the carbon cycle by taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and storing it away in different systems, including, of course, in the fossil fuels, which we're so readily burning up at the moment. All of that was produced by photosynthesis, but an awful long time ago. And one of the things I talk about in the book is for us to get real about photosynthesis and to be able to use plant energy in real time and to be moving away from these fossil-based stores of photosynthetic energy and to be using photosynthesis and indeed sunshine in the moment which it's falling on the earth rather than blowing these massive accumulated carbon debts into the atmosphere all at once, which is causing all these other big problems that we know about in terms of climate change. And so we can harness plants, we can build solar factories, solar panels, we can build concentrating solar power farms, we can use sunshine to heat hot water, and we can be putting ourselves back in the natural order of things by using sunshine as the plants have done for the last several billion years. And, you know, the extent to which we've already overtaken the capacity of photosynthesis to be able to run the planet as it used to is reflected in the fact, as you say, that something like now 40% of terrestrial photosynthetic output is now under the control of humans. And anyone who's been on an aeroplane journey across the United States, you look out of the window and you see what that means in practice pretty quickly, in the extent to which there's not much natural vegetation left now, but huge areas under cropland management and under animal production, beef, pigs and all the rest of it, and chickens, all of which, of course, is essentially taking the photosynthetic potential of the earth and using it for the benefit of one single species, namely humankind, with the remaining 8 million species on Earth having to use up the bit that we're not using, which doesn't seem like a very sensible allocation of the Earth's productive capacity if you look at it from that wider ecological point of view, and to see that actually our future fortunes are bound up very much with the rest of life on Earth, and that we can't really separate ourselves from the welfare of all these other creatures. So photosynthesis is one of those things that I think we take for granted, and you know we see greenery as we go about, but I don't think many people these days, at least, really take on board what that means in the sense of our utter dependence upon it.
Another thing that you stress in the book is how we are basically living on the principle of nature as opposed to the dividends. And yeah. I wanted to conclude by, what do you mean by that, and how do we shift from eating up the principle, and a method you sort of described as kind of being kind of Bernie Madoff-ish.
Yes, it's Bernie Madoff style. Well, this is the whole basis of the idea of so-called natural capital, is to make the parallel between ecosystems and the financial system. And anybody who invests money in companies like, you know, General Motors or an Apple, you put money in, you buy a share, you're buying capital there. And from the capital, you get a dividend, and so you get a return. And so with natural capital, you might see an area of ocean as your capital, and the dividend you'd get from that would be a supply of fish, some carbon dioxide being soaked up, and oxygen coming out of the ocean because of what the plankton are doing. And those would be your dividends, the fish, the oxygen, and the carbon storage. But what we're doing by overfishing and destroying the oceans through different kinds of pollution and the acidification of the oceans that's going ahead now because of all the CO2 we're releasing, basically what we're doing is we're destroying the capital. And this, I think, then is a very pertinent parallel with what Bernie Madoff did with his massive Ponzi scheme. He basically defrauded people by letting them believe that the capital that they were putting into his scheme was being invested to get a return. It wasn't. He was basically taking people's capital and using it to pay previous investors a dividend, in inverted commas. It wasn't a dividend at all. He was basically destroying the capital and counting it as growth. That's exactly what we're doing to nature. We're destroying the natural capital and we're counting it as economic growth, when in fact, at best, it's a Ponzi scheme. And I think for me, that is why the idea of natural capital actually is quite powerful. Because if you look at how you manage a financial fund and then look at how we manage nature, you see a big disconnect. Because Bernie Madoff went to prison for 150 years. That was his sentence for the fraud he committed. People doing the planetary Ponzi, of course, get vast bonuses. And in my country, they get knighthoods and honored in all sorts of different ways, when in fact, I think we need to be making a different judgment about that.
So are you hopeful that by thinking, helping people rethink the value of nature, both its intrinsic and economic value, that we may make a shift and we will understand what nature has done for us?
Totally. I'm a total optimist, and I do think this comes down, as you say, as to how we think about things. And so if I think, you know, I think if we begin to see nature as a series of capital assets that provide for our welfare in terms of our health, our nutrition, the protection of property, the controlling of disease, the way in which our lives are enriched through health and the benefits we get from being in more natural environments, if we start to see this for what it truly is, a set of economic assets, I think we'll quickly transform the situation in the reversal of the trends that we see now where we continue to degrade nature. Because the main reason this destruction is allowed to continue is because it is seen as economically rational. If we can get more understanding that actually it's not rational, it's not economically sensible, and that actually what we're doing is investing in this massive Ponzi scheme that is doomed to collapse, then I think people might wish to see different policies from governments and from companies.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us this morning, Tony Juniper, and I hope we can have you back on sometime.
Well, I do hope so, Barbara. Thank you.
We've been talking with Tony Juniper, who's author of What Has Nature Ever Done for Us? How Money Really Does Grow on Trees. You're listening to Locus Focus, and now it's time for you to become an active part of this program. This is the interactive part of the show, and Ani and Jen, I do believe, are here to talk to you about why you need to call right now at 877-500-5266 and become a member of this thriving community resource, KBOO, the Pollinators of the Airwaves.
We are all about interactivity and catching the buzz down here at KBOO. Please do help pollinate the airwaves, help generate ideas and share them with others. I mean, that is the essence of KBOO. We are here to broaden discourse, and we need your help to do it. You are where the funding comes from. We are grassroots supported community radio, and right now it is important to do your part to keep this program going. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. Ah, that ring, it's like music to our ears, isn't it, Jen?
It sure is. You, our members, are our natural capital. You keep KBOO on the air to bring you vital information. We still have books from Tony Juniper, What Has Nature Ever Done for Us? How Money Really Does Grow on Trees. Of course, we all know that nature is much more important than just a beautiful landscape. There's some real hard facts in here that help us to learn more information about that. You can get this book for a $60 minimum pledge at 877-500-5266.
You can also join us online at kboo.fm. However you choose to do it, well, heck, you could even come down to 20 Southeast 8th. And that's just off of Burnside on beautiful scenic Southeast 8th Avenue here in inner Southeast Portland. It would be wonderful to meet you. We could give you a tour of the station. You could find out exactly how your money is spent. And you can know that your pennies, your nickels, your dimes, your dollars go to very good use here at KBOO. We are a pretty no-frills organization. And we do it with your love and support. Right now, we are asking for a little of that cash support to keep us going for another few months. 877-500-5266 or online kboo.fm. This book is fascinating. I've loved the interview that Barbara has been doing with Tony Juniper this morning. What has nature ever done for us? Well, let's figure that out. You can get yourself some great information in this book with just your $60 contribution to your community radio station, KBOO. 877-500-5266. We are looking to raise, let's see, about another $320 before the top of the hour. We can do that. We're over halfway there. With your love and support right now, we can make that goal and keep the membership drive going strong in this fall drive 2013 for your community radio station. 45-year legacy here at KBOO.
Happy birthday.
That's right. Happy birthday, KBOO. We love
KBOO. Right.
And you can thank us. You can wish us a happy birthday. You can be a part of the celebration when you dial 877-500-5266.
I want to ask a question. What has KBOO ever done for you? So think that hard. Think about that hard as you go to your phone right now and call 877-500-5266 or go to your computer and click, go online to kboo.fm and click on the Donate Now jar that's right at the upper right-hand corner of the page. But Ani and Jen, what would you say KBOO has done for all of us?
Well, if you belong to a community organization other than KBOO out there, be it environmental, social justice, any kind of organization that's helping to make our communities better, you can probably count on KBOO has somehow helped your organization, either by promoting your event, maybe interviewing people that are working within your organization, talking about issues which are relevant to your organization. You know, a lot of environmental organizations could get a hold of this book by Tony Juniper. These are very strong arguments on reasons to defend our natural resources right here. You can get a copy of this book for a $60 minimum pledge at 877-500-5266. Support KBOO because we're supporting all the good work that goes on in our community today.
And what has KBOO done for me? Well, it saved my life when I was 12 and disenfranchised growing up queer in North Portland in 1978. I mean, that kind of connection is really invaluable. Knowing that there were other people out there that maybe were a little bit different, that maybe were, you know, people that I could connect with when I was old enough to ride the bus across town. And then I did. And it's been an amazing journey ever since. I've been involved in a number of different community organizations, just like Jen was talking about. And the thing that we all had in common was we were all getting interviewed on KBOO. KBOO is that platform that supports so many communities of thoughts, so many communities in general here in the Cascadia area and beyond. And that's why it's important that you support it right now with your call, 877-500-5266. You can bring your credit card to the phone and become a member instantaneously, or you could say choose to do it in a sustaining fashion, just $5 a month or $10 a month. It's so easy to do. Just takes a couple minutes to set up with the volunteer that's answering your call, and then you'll be good to go, as we say. And you'll listen to KBOO in a whole different way, knowing that it's your dollars, in part, that are causing the signal and allowing the signal to come to you and to get into your thought space and to help to generate these ideas so that we can work together for a better world. That's, at essence, what we're about here at KBOO. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
And we're back now with the end of Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein. I want to thank you for listening today. We were talking this a little bit earlier with Tony Juniper, author of What Has Nature Ever Done For Us? How Money Really Does Grow on Trees. And next week, my guest is going to be Bruce Rich, author of a new book about the World Bank and its lousy environmental and social justice legacy. And in fact, we'll learn about how the World Bank is doing everything wrong, according to what Tony Juniper writes in his book, What Has Nature Ever Done For Us? If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want to your friends or families to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locusfocus. I want to thank my engineer, Joe Clemens. Again, I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Farron. Thanks for listening, and keep pledging to keep KBOO strong.
Distant places, when I've got my own mind, but it leaves me when I least expect it. Then I'm looking for a short line for home. I'm praying to a sunset mountain, well aware the softest lights behind me. I stare at the pink cloud water fountains and wonder now, who is ever gonna find me? Well, who doesn't have a thing with power? But how it leaves you late and lonely. And now with freedom on my front porch, I eat my dinner with if only. I give when the giving's easy, and then I crack when the give's too hard. I adore the distant hazy, and then I run when it's in my yard.
Come out and party. KBOO is proud to present a KBOO dance party with live salsa and Latin jazz.
Hi, I'm Nick Geffro, host of Jazz Lives on KBOO. I brought back my 9-piece salsa and Latin jazz band, Palante. We have some exciting musicians, including lead vocalist Isa Perez from Havana, Cuba. And Palante is putting on a KBOO benefit salsa dance party. Come hear us on Sunday night, October 20th, from 6:30 to 10 p.m. Celebrate with us on the big dance floor at Fontainebleau Nightclub. The club is at Northeast 3rd and Broadway in Portland.
Meet new friends and enjoy a KBOO community event with some exciting Latin flavor. That's Palante, Sunday, October 20th from 6:30 to 10 p.m. at Northeast 3rd and Broadway. More details at kboo.fm.
You are tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. The time is just at 11 o'clock. Up next is Health Watch. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde Vocational Rehabilitation Program, providing assistance to eligible tribal members with disabilities on regaining and retaining and securing employment, particular to their strengths, capabilities, and experience. Information at grandron.org or 1-800-242-8196.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host. Today's guest is Gary Knoll. Gary is an internationally renowned expert in the field of health and nutrition, the author of more than 70 books, and the director of more than 100 critically acclaimed documentaries. He's the host